Consumer Reports has done a number of investigations into dietary supplements over the last few years. In general, I think they want to make people aware of the difference between regulations for prescription drugs, over-the-counter medications, and dietary supplements. In the September 2020 Consumer Reports magazine, Ryan Felton focuses in on one tool used by the FDA in their oversight of supplements. They find the CARES system used by the FDA is insufficient to protect consumers against products that may cause harm. In this article titled, A Tattered Safety Net, we learn about what needs to change and how to protect ourselves from misleading or dangerous substances. In August 2011, a Colorado woman was rushed to an emergency room in cardiac arrest a day after her husband injected her with a mineral salt called cesium chloride. For the better part of a year, the 61-year-old had been treating herself for a breast lump by taking a dietary supplement containing the compound as an alternative treatment for breast cancer, until a nutritionist recommended injecting a dose instead. ER doctors were at first able to stabilize her condition, but after a week, the woman was discharged to hospice in a neurovegetative state, according to a case report in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine. She died 3 days later. Her use of cesium chloride, a chemical compound purported to kill cancer cells, probably triggered abnormal heartbeats that stopped her heart, the report's authors concluded. 7 years later, citing published accounts of 16 patients who had died, suffered cardiac arrest, or experienced other serious harm after using the products, the consumer advocacy group Public Citizen petitioned the Food and Drug Administration to ban all dietary supplements containing cesium chloride or other cesium salts. In early February of this year, the FDA agreed to issue an advisory warning consumers about the risks of the supplements, and it has acknowledged that the substance is associated with significant safety risks. But the agency denied Public Citizen's request to ban cesium chloride products. One key reason: only a few adverse events related to those products show up in a little-known FDA database that the agency relies on to police the nation's $46 billion supplement industry. That database, called CARES, which is pronounced CARES, and stands for the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition Adverse Event Reporting System, is meant to alert the agency to potentially dangerous supplements. But the cesium chloride episode illustrates serious shortcomings in a warning system that doesn't adequately protect the public, a Consumer Reports investigation has found. As long ago as 2001, when the FDA handled adverse event reports linked to supplements in a precursor to CARES, a report by the Inspector General of the Department of Health and Human Services called the agency system an inadequate safety valve to protect consumers. 2 decades later, that remains the case, even with CARES in place. That's according to CR's review of thousands of pages of FDA reports and records obtained through public records requests and interviews with more than a dozen consumer advocates and experts on supplements. Consumers overwhelmingly believe that supplements are safe or else they wouldn't be allowed on the market. And because of concerns raised by COVID-19, they now may be more likely than ever to seek out supplements that promise to keep them healthy. Michael Carome, MD, Director of Health Research at Public Citizen, says that the regulatory structure for dietary supplements is flawed, and he says that relying on reports submitted after a product is on the market into a database known to have issues puts consumers at risk. CARES is a collection of reports of harm linked to dietary supplements and other products. Reports are submitted through an online form or by mail or fax by consumers, healthcare practitioners, and manufacturers. Doctors and consumers who may have learned about the system from their healthcare provider or by searching online submit the reports voluntarily. Manufacturers must submit them whenever they receive reports of people who report serious adverse events, including death or hospitalization, after taking one of their products. About 3/4 of the reports come from supplement makers, according to records obtained by CR. The reports can't, on their own, establish a cause and effect link between an incident and a product. Rather, the agency periodically scours the database using algorithms to detect signals of potential safety problems. But the system is plagued by problems, starting with underreporting. Research suggests that only about 2% of adverse events possibly related to dietary supplements each year are ever reported to the CARES database. As a result, it can take years for the FDA to build a case that a supplement is unsafe, and as with cesium chloride, to even consider getting it removed from the market. Unlike with monitoring of prescription and over-the-counter drugs, the FDA doesn't have to alert the public when it investigates a potential problem with a supplement. In addition, though the FDA has recently tried to encourage consumers to submit more reports, CR found that report totals are down, and in only a few cases has CARES clearly played a major role in the recall of dietary supplements. The FDA acknowledges the challenges of using the database, a reality underscored in a February 2020 memo obtained by CR related to the agency's handling of cesium chloride supplements. In that memo, an FDA staffer not only pointed to the small number of reports linked to the compound, which wasn't surprising given the known problem of underreporting, but also said those reports often lacked crucial information about the people reporting problems, including their age, contact details, and relevant medical history. That's in part because those details are optional. The FDA requires only the reports include the product name, the possible harm, the name of the person filing the complaint, and when submitted by a manufacturer, the name of the patient and contact information for the person or company filing the complaint. Names are not visible in the public database. Unlike pharmaceuticals, which must undergo extensive testing before they can be sold or prescribed, federal regulations generally don't require supplement makers to prove that their products are safe before going to market. Instead, the FDA's role in identifying and regulating potentially dangerous supplements generally comes after consumers have already purchased and taken them. The agency does periodically inspect manufacturing facilities and, in a few cases, test products for possible adulterants. But even when it tests and finds problems, the results don't always lead to action. In June, for example, the FDA published a study on bitter orange weight loss supplements, revealing that about 10% of the samples it tested contained illegal stimulants. But as of mid-July, the agency had still failed to warn consumers about the risk. Mainly, the FDA relies on CARES, even with its known flaws, to detect potential problems. And the agency considers it a useful tool despite its limitations, says Nathan Arnold, an agency spokesperson. These reports require careful review and interpretation, and conclusions should be made within the context of all available safety data about a product, with CARES data being one piece, Arnold says. He adds that the agency also monitors products through information from manufacturers and healthcare providers, and when the agency finds unsafe or illegal products, it acts based on public health priorities and available resources. Andrea Wong, PhD, Senior Vice President of Scientific and Regulatory Affairs at the Council for Responsible Nutrition, a trade association for the supplement industry, says CARES works well. "We fully support the system that's in place," she says. But some advocates say CARES is flawed. The FDA's adverse event reporting system may weed out a few dangerous supplements, but only after they've been on sale, sometimes for many years, says Chuck Bell, program director in CR's advocacy division, which has pushed for years to reform dietary supplement regulation. One example of the system's shortcomings concerns Hydroxycut, a weight loss supplement first popularized in the early 2000s. In 2004, the FDA banned ephedra, the active ingredient in hydroxycut, after it received thousands of adverse event reports linking it to heart attacks, strokes, deaths, and other adverse events. But rather than withdrawing hydroxycut from the market, its manufacturer reformulated the product. Despite that reformulation, reports of liver damage continued. Martin Robertson, a Maryland resident, claimed in a lawsuit that he developed liver failure in 2008, several months after he started using hydroxycut. As a direct and proximate result of using hydroxycut regular rapid release caplets, the lawsuit says, Robertson suffered severe mental and physical pain and suffering, and has sustained permanent injuries and emotional distress. Iovate, the maker of hydroxycut, denied the claims in court. The case was eventually settled. It took the FDA 7 years to compile enough reports, 23 in all, including one death, to determine that hydroxycut was causing the liver injuries, to warn consumers to stop using it, and to get the manufacturer to recall the product line. In a 2013 report, the Government Accountability Office, GAO, a government watchdog, pointed to hydroxycut as an example of how difficult it is for the FDA to use CARES to accumulate enough evidence to discern a clear relationship between a product and a reported health problem. Most reports do not initiate or support such actions because it is difficult to establish causality between the product and the health problem based on the limited information in an CARES report, the report said. Another case from about a decade ago with a supplement called OxyElite Pro illustrates other flaws in the FDA's oversight. Made by USP Labs, the supplement illegally contained a stimulant called DMAA, an amphetamine derivative linked to high blood pressure and heart attacks. The Department of Defense, in late 2011, ordered supplements containing DMAA to be removed from stores on military bases after it said the stimulant was a possible factor in the deaths of 4 soldiers. A subsequent analysis of the CARES database, captured in a study by FDA staffers, showed that the agency had received several reports citing products containing DMAA the previous year. Months later, in April 2012, the FDA issued warning letters to firms that manufactured supplements containing DMAA, which led some companies to remove the products from the marketplace. But USP Labs continued to sell its product, reformulating OxyElite Pro with a previously unused supplement ingredient called Agilene. In the fall of 2013, the Hawaii Department of Public Health identified 21 cases involving adults who developed liver disease after taking OxyElite Pro and submitted reports about them to CARES. After reviewing those cases, plus an additional 12 involving consumers in other states, the FDA determined that OxyElite Pro likely contributed to liver injury. USP Labs agreed to recall the product, saying it was a precautionary measure. Daniel Fabricant, PhD, who led the FDA supplements office at the time and is now CEO of the industry group Natural Products Association, says the agency responded in a timely way, evaluating the reports as they came in. But a subsequent study by FDA staffers in the journal Public Health Reports highlighted a significant lag between the time an incident occurred and when it was reported, and said the value of the system depends largely on the extent to which potential reporters employ the system. A 2014 article in the New England Journal of Medicine by Peter Cohen, MD, an assistant professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School who has studied supplements extensively, was more blunt. The FDA's delayed response, with its life-threatening consequences, is attributable to our woefully inadequate system for monitoring supplement safety. After the ephedra ban, in 2006, Congress tried to improve the adverse reporting system for supplements by mandating that companies submit reports they receive, but the law required that they submit only serious ones, such as those resulting in death, hospitalization, or a life-threatening experience. And the only way the FDA can verify that companies submit those reports is by auditing their reports during site inspections, something that happens infrequently. Of equal concern were reporting rates for adverse events estimated to be around 2%, according to a 2017 study in Annals of Pharmacotherapy written by FDA staffers. In late 2016, the FDA again tried to encourage the submission of more reports, this time by making it possible not just for people to submit them, but also for consumers, academics, and others to examine the database itself. The agency hoped that increased access would translate into more people submitting reports. But since CARES went public, the FDA has actually received fewer adverse event reports associated with supplements, from 5,355 in 2016 to 2,899 in 2018, the agency confirmed. Arnold, the FDA spokesperson, says the FDA cannot speculate why data may be fluctuating, but regardless, CARES continues to be a useful tool for its intended purposes. Harvard's Cohen says the agency isn't doing enough to follow up. Year after year, there has been no substantial enforcement action by the FDA to remove dangerous supplements from the marketplace based on adverse event reports, he says. Rational consumers and their physicians could reasonably conclude that it is fruitless to submit more reports to an agency that is not following up on the reports. An examination of the current publicly available database by CR suggests that it still offers little use to consumers, a critique leveled in the Inspector General's report from two decades ago. By law, the FDA has to conduct routine screenings of FAERS, the drug counterpart to CARES, then publicize any potential signal of a serious risk associated with a drug. After the agency evaluates signals from that database, it determines whether the drug is associated with the risk, and if so, what regulatory action is required, then publishes an update of the findings on its website. But with supplements, the FDA isn't required to publicize the results of its investigation or to even tell the public it conducted one. The FDA didn't answer CR's question about why it doesn't use the same approach for CARES as it does with FAERS. Wong at the Council for Responsible Nutrition says the system works well because the FDA would notify consumers if CARES revealed a risky supplement. FDA's already analyzed the information and, based on their scientific expertise, has determined that information is relevant for consumers to be aware of, she says. But the reports in CARES are public and could also be viewed by academics, researchers, and consumers. So, if there are emerging reports about potential hazards, consumers would want to know that as quickly as possible, says CR's Bell. Publicizing the investigation of a signal found in CARES, especially one that ends with the agency finding no regulatory action is necessary, could also reassure consumers about the safety of a product, he says. Independent experts and consumer advocates have suggested several ways to improve the system. Peter Lurie, a former FDA official and president of the Center for Science in the Public Interest, a consumer watchdog in Washington, D.C., suggests the FDA should amend the 2006 law to require supplement makers to submit reports of incidents it receives about all events, not just ones deemed serious. It's always good to have more data, right? He says, if it's in the hands of the company to make a determination if something is serious, there's always the incentive to underreport. Another suggestion is for the FDA to better coordinate with other groups that receive reports of adverse events linked to supplements. For example, between 2008 and 2010, poison control centers received an estimated 1,000 more reports of events related to those products than the FDA had received, according to the 2013 GAO study. The GAO pointed out that the FDA could benefit from such a move. The FDA considered a plan to obtain the data, but said it couldn't afford it in the end. Consumer advocates and researchers have continued to suggest that the FDA explore the option. Experts and advocates also say the FDA should create a mandatory registry of supplements that includes the name of the product and contact information for the company before they can be sold. Recent cases underscore the problems of not having such a registry, including an August 2019 outbreak of dangerously low blood sugar levels that hospitalized 17 men who took a sexual enhancement supplement called V8. Almost a year after the outbreak, the FDA still won't even say whether it knows who made the product. Had V8 been registered in such a database, that could have helped the agency more quickly track down who was behind it. The FDA says it supports the creation of a registry. CR's Bell adds that an even better fix would be requiring supplement makers, like drug companies, to prove that their products are safe and effective before they are sold. It would be far preferable to require safety testing and FDA approval up front, he says. The current system, in effect, benefits the supplement companies far more than it benefits consumers. And we have time to read a column associated with this article, which is titled, Three Safety Questions You Should Ask. And you may want a pen or something to write with, anything you use to take notes, because there are some websites here. More than two-thirds of Americans regularly take at least one supplement, according to a 2019 CR nationally representative survey of 2,006 adults. Most assume that those supplements are safe, and about half believe that the FDA tests the products. It doesn't. Unlike prescription and over-the-counter drugs, the FDA doesn't require supplement makers to prove that their products are safe or effective before they're sold. Instead, the FDA largely relies on the good faith of manufacturers that the products do what they claim, don't cause harm, and have what's on their labels. In some cases, the agency also spot checks the specific products when red flags are raised by medical research or by reports of adverse events submitted by consumers or others. That means it's largely up to consumers to do their own homework, says Chuck Bell, who has led CR's advocacy on supplements for 20 years. They have to ask, do the supplements work? Are they safe? Do they even have what they claim? Here are some tips on how to answer those questions. Does it work? Though manufacturers don't have to prove that their products are effective, many dietary supplements have been studied fairly extensively, and there are some good resources. Start with CR's own Guide to Natural Cures, which can be found at cr.org/naturalcures0920, which summarizes what's known about more than a dozen popular supplements and other natural remedies. Or check out resources from the National Institutes of Health. The Medline Plus Guide to Herbs and Supplements can be found at medlineplus.gov/drug-info/herb_all.html. And dietary supplement fact sheets found at ods.od.nih.gov/factsheets/list-all. Of course, also check with a trusted healthcare provider. And Bell says, keep an eye out for hype. If a product's claim seems too good to be true, cures cancer, prevents heart attacks, it probably is. Is it safe? Many of the same sources that address the effectiveness of supplements also include information about their safety. And there are good reasons to investigate safety issues. For one thing, just because a product is natural doesn't mean it's safe. In fact, many drugs are developed from plants. But while medications must come in standardized doses and forms, supplements sometimes don't. In addition, supplements can interact with medication or pose risks to people with underlying health problems. So, when you talk with your healthcare provider about whether a supplement works, also ask whether it is safe, especially for you. The FDA's CARES database includes reports of adverse events linked to supplements, but searching it is difficult and the results are hard to interpret. Instead, use the CARES database at safetyreporting.hhs.gov to report possible harm caused by a supplement. And CARES is C-A-E-R-S. What's in it? Not all supplements actually have all the ingredients they claim to have. Last year, CVS began ensuring that every supplement it sells has undergone third-party testing. 7% failed. Some research suggests that herbal or botanical supplements may be more likely than vitamin or mineral supplements to be contaminated or to not contain what they claim. For example, of 16 echinacea and 13 turmeric products that CR recently tested, more than a third had elevated levels of lead or bacteria or low levels of active compounds. Though the FDA doesn't routinely test supplements, some independent groups do. That includes the U.S. Pharmacopoeia, a nonprofit that sets the most widely accepted standards, NSF International, another nonprofit, and two for-profit companies, consumerlabs.com and UL. For more information, you can go to cr.org/supplements0920. And the other ones were medlineplus.gov/drug-info/herb-all.html and cr.org/naturalcures0920 or 0920, I guess, for September 20, this issue. Well, I hope that has given you some idea about how to research supplements you may have an interest in taking or that you are taking. And definitely remember to let your own doctor know what supplements you're taking to make sure that there are no medication interactions. So thank you for tuning in to SoundBody today. Please stay well and come back next week for more healthy living ideas.